Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good evening and welcome to another edition of Blue Shirt Banner Radio. My name is Jim Schmiedeberg, and it is Tuesday, November 3rd. I appreciate you guys joining us for this early edition tonight at 7 p.m. We have the Rangers coming up at 10 o'clock tonight. We're all looking forward to their game against the Canucks. And as always, I am joined by my partner, Mouth. Good evening, Mouth. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jim. Glad to be here and love it. Once again, big show, big night, talking Ranger puck. And we got a game later tonight. I tell you, it's a great night as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, without a doubt. Looking forward to it. We have a great guest tonight, Mouth.
We got a fantastic guest. I mean, if you want to talk about a guy who's who knows the ins and outs of the Rangers organization, as far as I'm concerned, he's a living Ranger historian. One of the all-time greats, the go-to guy for Ranger history. And, you know, you don't get better than John Halligan. And that really is the truth. I mean, I'm not soft-soaping anybody, giving them a little bit overhyped. John Halligan is the man. I mean, this is a guy that we've seen in yearbooks year after year, and he just can give us the lowdown. We're having a little technical problems with some kind of humming going on, but I'm trying to figure out if that's me, Jim, or possibly the... I don't know, the internet goblins that sometimes come out on Block Talk Radio. But I'm glad to be here, let me tell you. And, okay. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. John Halligan is the man. He's one of the all-time greats, and we love him. We're going to have him on the show. And is John ready to join us? I guess.
Yeah, I'm here, Eddie. I'm ready.
Good evening, John.
John, let me tell you, right off the bat, I don't know if you remember this, but up in Scarsdale, I was at the signing. I met you. You autographed my book. You said, to the big mouth of Ranger hockey. And let me tell you, I am got a quite large mouth when it comes to Ranger hockey. And we talked about, I actually mentioned... Tommy Schein, who you're great friends with, and I hope that I would love to be in a room with both of you guys and talk hockey, because you guys got quite a knowledge base and just so much stories, I would imagine.
Well, that was a great night up in Scarsdale. We very much enjoyed it, and particularly, given the turnout, given the fact that it was awful weather that night. I mean, it was a nice fall night, but it turned into, like, it seemed like early winter. But once we got everything turned around towards the Rangers into hockey, I think it changed the whole tenor and mood of the evening.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it really was a great turnout for the people who weren't there, and it's just amazing. Ranger fans are diehard. But I have to tell you, you know, nothing stops these Ranger fans getting their Ranger fix, that's for sure. And I got to tell you, I mean, you know, as I said in the opening, it's our pleasure to have you, John. It really is. We just...
Well, I appreciate that. And Ranger fans have proven over the years that they come out, you know, in thick or thin. The weather is nothing to deter Ranger fans. You see sellouts at the Garden when the Rangers are there, when other sports and other events would be affected by 40-50% people not showing up, but that's not the case. Ranger fans are avid and ardent and rabid and any other words you can find to fit them, but they're one of a kind, and I appreciate them over the years.
We're not just one of a kind, we're the finest kind, I like to say.
I like that one. Yeah, and it's just, you know, again, and I think the Ranger fans also, you know, even pre-1994, have an appreciation for the past. You see it at these meet and greets, you know, with whether it's Eddie Shockman last night, Gilles Velibure and Ron Greshner were at a book signing with Adam Rader and Russ Cohen. You're co-authors of the book 100 Ranger Grids, which is a fantastic book. The stories are great. The pictures are fantastic, and I really love it, and I really enjoy it. I got like 3 or 4 copies. But let's find out a little bit about John Halligan. You are the focus, so to speak. John, can you tell me how you got all started with this, you know, with the Rangers, how it came about, your early beginnings, how you got the job, and basically give the fans an overview of your tenure there, years-wise, with the Rangers?
Well, I can tell you that it lasted from 1963 to 1983. Then I went to the National Hockey League for 3 years, but then I went back to the Rangers when Phil Esposito took over in 1986. So I've had 24 working years for the Rangers and 20 at the National Hockey League. But during the 20 at the National Hockey League, I certainly was not very far away from the Rangers being, you know, only 20 blocks away at the league office in Manhattan.
Right.
So it really translates, at least in my mind, to 44 years in hockey, even though only physically 24 of them were at the Rangers. But I'd always had a great feel for Rangers lore, and, you know, any team that's been around for 84 years since 1926, 27 has got to have an awful lot of history hidden away under rugs and in files that people don't realize or know about. And that's what Adam Rader, myself, and Russ Cohen really reveled in, looking up and finding stories that hadn't been seen before, and I should say, as you did, pictures that had never been seen before.
John, when you came back, when Phil Esposito was the GM, you must have went through typewriter ribbons like water, typing up trade press releases. The New York Rangers announced another trade.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I believe in his short tenure, which wasn't all that long, wasn't even 3 years, Phil went to 39 trades, I think it was. And it's funny because you're right. Typewriters were just going out at that time, and computers were coming in. Fortunately, we didn't need ribbons anymore. But if we had worked only on typewriters, you're right. The typewriter ribbons would have been worn out. But that's Phil. That was his personality. He loved to, rattle people's chains and change things. I think I remember his saying when he first came in. He said, "We need a saying." And I said, "I'll work on that." He said, "Forget it. Enough waiting." That was his chain, his catchphrase.
Well, and after he left, you had to change it to "quite not enough waiting."
Well, after he left, I sat back and I said, "Phew."
I could say so. I mean, Phil was trade. It was exciting as a fan because it was like there was trades every week. We were getting new guys to look at. One week it was Pat Price. The next week it was some other guy. So it was exciting.
Well, I often used to say to Phil, I say, "Phil, you know, sometimes the best trade you make is the trade that you don't make. I mean, maybe you should sit back. Maybe you don't have to make a trade every single day. Nobody's checking up on you to see what you're doing. The result is in the standings. But from a PR guy's standpoint, my own, we were certainly in the paper every day, and we got ink, and we're on radio and television, and that was my job. He made my job the easiest of anyone because he was always doing things.
Phil traded so many players, he ran out and made a trade for a coach.
Well, the first thing, he got Michelle Bergeron, of course, and that was really the first true French, 100% French-Canadian coach, with the exception of Phil Watson back in the 50s, to run the Rangers. And Michelle really never, was really comfortable in New York. And eventually Phil had to replace him, I think, with 3 games to go in the 89 season. And then he lost all 3 of those games, and then we went out 4 straight in the playoffs to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, that was, I always remember that. Eddie Shockman was on the bench with Phil. He was waving the white towel. We were bringing out all the good luck charms, but it just was not to be. And I got to tell you, listen, we've had a lot of, this speaks to what you were speaking to about the Rangers being the diehard fans that they are. I mean, we haven't had a lot of winning, but I got to tell you, we are there every game, game in, game out, whether it's Scarsdale, New York, or Tribeca, New York, the Ranger faithful are there, and that's what I like.
Well, yeah. It's always been that way. They've had a very active fan club, the Rangers fan club, all the way starting back in 1950, still very active today. And these are the salt of the earth people. They come out, as you say, no matter what. And even it's even more remarkable when you think about where ticket prices have gone, the prices of tickets in the last couple of years, to see the same people. And I go back to the garden. I only get to maybe 8 or 9 games a year nowadays, but I see the same people that I saw in the 60s, and they're still around. And that says a lot for Ranger fans, and it certainly says a lot for their loyalty.
And it's true. And I thought, especially with myself, as I'm going to turn to a little bit more somber subject, with the passing of Bill Chadwick last week, I got a lot of emails, and I did a little video feature on Bill on my website, and unbelievable the amount of people commented how he affected their lives, their TV lives. He affected my life. I met the man several times in person, and actually, in one of the clips that I put up, he jokingly says, "John Halligan is 49 again," which I thought was great. And I know that you, when they had you on at MSG, and they were talking to you, and I think it was Sam Rosen you were speaking to, and you started to get into it, but it just wasn't quite enough for me. I've actually heard from Bill's grandson, Matt, who's over in Beijing, China. He was good enough to talk to me, and he's going to give me some pictures of Bill later in life with his grandchildren and stuff like that. Tell me, let's get into Bill Chadwick, because I really think he needs to have his due here on the show. I'm planning on having a whole Bill Chadwick tribute show, and I think there's none other, alive right now can really give us the insight on Bill's career as a broadcaster and just a member of the Rangers family. John, can you give us a little bit of insight on Bill?
No, sure. I traveled with him for 14 years, and Bill was kind of every man, if you will, to make a literary reference. He was not classically trained in broadcasting. In fact, two of the greatest broadcasters New York has ever known, Marv Albert and Jim Gordon, are very frank and were very frank about they had to adjust their styles to Bill Chadwick's style, because Bill Chadwick's style had never been seen before. He said what he thought, and he had these atrocious mangling of the names. Reggie Leach, he called Leash, and every dog in the metropolitan area would jump up, and he would say that this game, unless they get it under control, is going to be Delaney. Now, I have no idea what that meant. But he was always referencing, it seemed to me, vaudeville acts. They're running around like singers, midgets. These two guys play like frickin' frack. And I'd have to look them up, and looking them up, the internet wasn't there. And I would say, Bill, what are singers, midgets? Oh, I don't know. They play in theaters in Minsky's and stuff like that. And he said whatever came into his head. But he was a pleasure to be around, and he obviously touched an awful lot of Ranger fans.
And it's funny you mention that, because as a teenager, I'm asking my father, what does Katie Bar the Door mean? Or like a cat in the marble hallway? Or, all these things he was saying. And my dad's like, I don't know. And I had to go ask my grandfather and grandmother, and they knew what it was. So,
well, Bill remembered all of those things, and he was, a young guy, even though he was older chronologically, and but he always referred to those kind of obscure metaphors or whatever. I remember Jim Gordon, who was the consummate professional, when the metaphors got out of hand, he just used to take his microphone and lay it down. He'd get up and stretch and take a walk while Chadwick was expounding on whatever subject of the night he had chosen to speak about.
It, see, it seemed like they had an awful lot of fun on those broadcasts. I mean, they were laughing and having a good time. And I always felt, you know, especially that I do collect a lot of the older tapes where, you know, they are there. It's almost like I feel like John Halligan is on the side telling them all the, you know, the info, the stats, giving them the stats while they're having a good time. Was that the case?
Well, that was exactly the case because I did sit right next to them, and I also provided them, the two of them, with appropriate beverages upon request when they wanted that.
Adult beverages, John?
They would be adult beverages. I mean, not the strongest kind, but the kind that was yellow in color. And they had a head. And when Bill would forget to get a between period guest, which happened often, I would be the emergency replacement. And that's how we sold a lot of our range of publications, because he would forget to get somebody, or the guest might be late getting to the booth, and he would just all of a sudden throw me on, and that became a regular practice.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. Like, why is John Halligan doing this interview?
But there was nobody else there.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I have a story. You know, it just goes to Bill, and I related this story to his grandson. And I remember when Bill had his local show out here on the island. You know, I was 18, 19, and, you know, big-time Ranger fan, and all the Rangers used to come down to the show, and I go in, and Bill was nice enough to invite me backstage or whatever, but in the studio after the show, and we're watching the Ranger game on TV, and he's already been replaced by Phil Esposito. Now, I'm 18 years old. I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at my hero, and I say, Esposito, I don't really like him as much as you, Bill, you know, because, you know, and he goes, Esposito doesn't know his ass from a hole in the wall. And as an 18-year-old, I'm like, he's treating me like an adult in his living room. But that's the way
that's
the guy
the way
was.
He was.
Yeah.
He could identify with anyone, and it came across. He was, what you see is what you get. If he thought it, he said it. He never had a blue pencil between his brain and his tongue. If he thought it, he said it.
Now, I like that.
It's true. I mean, he had, like, no inner dialogue before he said something. It just went boom. It came out. And he was a fantastic guy. And I really think, you know, it's too bad the Ranger fans of today didn't get to see that kind of TV broadcasting, sports broadcasting, where there was such an obvious love between both of the guys. And we don't hear much about Jim Gordon. Can you give us a little bit about Jim Gordon as well? What kind of guy he was? I know he went into politics later in life before his passing. Could you tell us what kind of guy Jim was?
Well, Jim was the consummate professional on the air and off the air. He took care of the people, the smaller people, the producers, the directors, the guys who worked in the truck on the road or in the control room at home, and he always made it a point, which Chadwick picked up on, to go down and thank those guys at the end of the game. He was just a genuine, hard-bitten at times newsman, but when he was into sports, which he loved, he became much like Chadwick, and Chadwick taught him and Gordon taught him, and they used to compliment each other and say, you know, knowing you, Bill, was like going to college when it comes to hockey. And knowing Jim was like going to college when it came to broadcasting.
Yeah, those are fantastic memories. And, you know, I want to kind of switch gears here. And let's talk about some of the public relations eras that you covered. Well, I guess we'll start with the Emil Francis era. What was Emil like to work with and the teams that he coached and, you know, some of the he had some successful teams there in the early 70s. What kind of guy was Emil and maybe some of the players that you had to deal with back then?
Sure. Well, he was the kind of guy who worked 25 hours out of 24, and that might have worked to his detriment, but that and picking of coaches. It's a hit-and-miss proposition, but he brought the Rangers back from the doldrums of the 60s And more importantly, people don't realize that when Amel took over, the Rangers were not selling out the Garden, particularly during the week. And they simply weren't. They played before half a house with games against Chicago, certainly, and to a certain extent Detroit. Montreal and Toronto indeed did sell out. But he had a lot of pressure on him to get the Garden full, which he did. And he did it by crafty drafting, guys like Brad Park and others. And he did it by, well, the big trade for Eddie Jockman. And then he was certainly rewarded by his old friends Rod Gilbert and John Mattel, who came along at the same time that Amel did. And we had great teams, but we kept running into the Philadelphia Flyers in the early 70s. But he will go down as perhaps the most successful coach in Ranger history, and it's that's only right.
Yeah. I mean, Emil the Cat Francis played goal for the Rangers, too.
He played goal in the 50s, and he played even more with the Chicago Blackhawks and an awful long minor league career as well. But his heart is in New York. It always has been, and he looks forward always to his return visits.
Now, I know especially the 60s and 70s, you had to deal with a lot of characters come through New York. I mean, let's face it, Rod Gilbert was a man about town, a guy who liked to enjoy the New York City nightlife. Can you give us maybe a story or an anecdote about Rod Reich?
Sure. He was the consummate New York Ranger and the first really to set down roots in New York and indeed to live in Manhattan, which was kind of a verboten in times before that. But, you know, for all of his reputation as a man about town, joie de vivre and everything, he was always ready to play. He was never, ever, did he overdo it regarding his New York. And to this day, and he's now 67, 68 years of age, he still loves New York, and his presence is well-known. He's still giving back to the Rangers and their fans.
Yeah, you know, Rod Reich was quite a character. I remember that at one time the Ranger broadcast decided to put him down between periods and kind of do a little update. Yeah, and it was just like, okay, Jimmy, Rangers up 3-2. Now back to you, Jimmy. And that was basically it. But it was always good to see.
You're absolutely right. I mean, he was good to see, there's no question, but he suffered from the fact that nobody really trained him. He was just like thrown into the fire, or baptism of fire, I guess you call it, without enough really savoir faire towards the broadcasting industry. But he's gotten through it, and he's worked 50 years for the same organization, and what can you say about that?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And, how about Eddie Jockman? Is there a story? I'm going to tell you, I met Eddie, and let me tell you, after a couple of drinks, he was like an open book. I got to tell you, he was telling me stories you wouldn't believe. He's telling me about Jimmy the Chief Nielsen and this and that, and we're getting into it, and I'm eating it up. Give me a good Eddie Jockman story.
Well, that's not hard, and I'm going to have to go back on with you guys at a later day because so many stories come through my mind. And I'm not going to have that kind of time tonight, but I will do that, and we'll have one or two more shows if you so choose. But Eddie came to the Rangers at 26 years of age after a rather illustrious minor league career, and he played without a mask at that time. And at one point, when it looked like the fans were going to boo him right out of the Garden, the Rangers had not yet become good. They threw garbage at him in the old Garden. This would be paper cups,
wow,
ice cream wrappers, maybe bottle tops and things like that. And then he kind of shyly shoveled it into the net and got ready. Well, there was a little break in the game, and Emil Francis, the coach, said, "You don't put it in the back of your net. Throw it right back at them." He says, "You're my goaltender, and you're going to be my goaltender." So Eddie goes out, and he took that big gold stick, and he flipped all that stuff, not all of it, but a lot of it, right over the boards, and some of the fans cheered him.
Wow. I got to tell you, John, we got to have you on again because I could sit here for hours talking stories.
You guys name it, and I'd be happy to do it.
Oh, that would
be great, John. We'd love to have you back.
Okay, you just let me know, and I'll do it.
I just got to ask you two more final questions, and we'll let you go. I just want to talk about this. I want to go. Can you name some players that love to do press?
Well, Vic Hatfield comes to mind. Certainly, Brad Park comes to mind. Roger Bear comes to mind. They became friendly with the newspapermen. This television was not really yet a factor in terms of hockey, because hockey was the fourth of the major sports. But the guys who befriended the press were those three guys principally, and that was a great effort, great help towards the Rangers public relations effort.
And I guess my second question is, who were the players that really hated the press? They hated to do press, they hated to do interviews, they hated to, just didn't get along, it was just not their thing.
Well, only one guy comes to mind, and that's Terry Sawchuk. Now, he's a Hall of Fame goaltender, but he once told me in the locker room, keep those sons of bitches away from me. He hated the press. But we'll get into more of those on another session.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, for joining
us.
It was our immense pleasure. We love having you. Anytime, you are welcome to Blue Shirt Banner Radio. We love you.
You guys shout anytime you want me, and I love the site, and I love the show.
Thanks, John, so much.
We'll keep in touch. We appreciate
it. So long, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
I mean, an absolute pleasure, John Halligan, and him and Russ Cohen and Adam Rader have delivered a book that I believe, guys, you got to go out and get. Get your wives, your girlfriends, your granddaughters, whatever it is, go out and get this book, Ranger 100 Greats. The photos. I'm in love with the photos. I'm a photo guy.
I love
the story.
Yeah, I mean, that was what I said when we first saw the book, was just the pictures alone are worth the price of the book. I mean, they're unbelievable. I mean, these aren't your standard, and you know, Adam and Russ both talked about this when we had them on. They're not your, you know, they went out of their way to find pictures that nobody had ever seen before.
Yeah, I mean, there's a picture of JD as a blue in there that was kind of like an afterthought. You know, he would. It wasn't the story. It was just he was there, and I forget what picture. And there's just a lot of rare pictures you're not going to see. And Russ Cohen did that. Russ Cohen went into those archives, and, you know, and the signings they're having have been fantastic for me. You know, I love seeing the players. And I can't get enough of Ranger history. And you know how I feel, Jim, about – you know, I talked to Pete Stemkowski briefly about this, but I just don't think Madison Square Garden does enough talking about pre-1994. You know, I've seen the 94 stuff, but I want to see more. But, you know, Pete said they asked him every question in the world when he was on, but John Halligan, you could have a John Halligan show. I mean, the guy knows everything.
Well, tell you what. From now on, this will be the John Halligan show.
I'll tell you.
I think we could do a six-hour show with him and not get bored.
Keep those son of a bitches away from me, Terry Sawchuk. I love it.
And you know, you make a great point about the pre-1994 era of the Rangers. I mean, you go to Yankee Stadium, and they got Monument Park and the banners and everything else, and the history's all there. And it's been a little while for me at Madison Square Garden, but I don't think there's anything like anything even remotely like that teaches Ranger fans about guys like, you know, like Bun Cook and Davy Kerr. And, you know, you're right. Anything, you know, before 1994, it's like it didn't happen. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, it's not a history like the, you know, the Yankees or the Canadians. It's not a history full of championships, but, you know, a lot of great players and a lot of great names have played in one version of Madison Square Garden or the other for the Rangers. And, you know, they deserve to be recognized.
And there's a million stories to tell that are timeless as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, I don't want to make it like a sound morbid at all, but people like John Halligan are not going to be around forever. I mean, these stories, if they're not documented And I know the man has four books to his credit, which is a help. It's a history that it needs to be out there. All right, it's not a winning history. We're not the Dallas Cowboys or the Yankees or what have you, but it is a history nonetheless. We're an original six team. It needs to be out there. That's my summation as far as that goes. I'm off the proverbial soapbox. I also wanted to say my niece is listening tonight, Katie, who I absolutely love and adore. Yes, the mouth does have a heart.
Well, let's say hello to Katie then. We're glad she's listening and she picked a good night. She picked a good night to tune in. And we have the great Russ Cohen even joined us tonight in the chat room, and he's been listening. John Halligan brings out the stars.
I mean, this is like, it might be Circus of the Stars. Who knows? But I got to tell you, now, I love Russ. Russ is a guy, and I'm going to tell you, he's got an XM radio show, so he is a star. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's no guy that I go to, and I don't care what Jess Rubenstein at the Prospect Park says. There is one guy I go for prospects, and you know I'm going to get in trouble for this, Jim, because he's going to write me an email when he hears this. How could you say Russ Cohen is the go-to guy for prospects? I'm sorry, when I'm invested in hockey cards and I want to know who to get, I go to Russ. And it was funny because I had asked him on Facebook, and we'll get to this later. We'll get done with this, but about Peter Mueller and what it would take the Rangers to get Peter Mueller, who's now found his way to the pine on the Phoenix Coyotes. He was a healthy scratch last night. Went on one of the message boards with a proposed trade, and I got my head handed to me. Saying, Peter Mueller, why don't you just ask for Steve Stamkos? And I'm like, the guy is not doing anything, and he looks like he's in a shutdown bower over in Phoenix. So, Russ Cohen, again, John Halligan. Who's next? Phil Esposito's going to come in here? it's fantastic. It's just a hell of a night right here at Blue Shirt Banter, I have to tell you.
It certainly is. And you know what? You and I talked about this the other day, which we'll get into a little bit more about the big sit downs that we had. But I said, we were talking about Russ Cohen, and I said, before the season when we had him on and we asked about some of the youngsters coming along, and we asked about Gilroy, and Russ said Gilroy wasn't ready to play in the NHL. And then after Gilroy made the team, we had Russ and Adam on again, and I said, well, what do you think about Gilroy now? And he said, I still don't think he's ready to make the team. And I said to you the other day, you know what? Maybe Russ Cohen was right.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Gilroy is a little bit, I know we got some chatters in the chat room that are glad that he's toned down his offense, but maybe it's been toned down a little bit. He's a first year guy. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater yet on any of this stuff. I mean, we still got to watch the wonderful emergence, the metamorphosis is the word I'm using, of the great involution as it unfolds before our eyes every game. So we got that to worry about, and it's just a lot of fun with these guys, and I'm telling you, you got to get the book. All right, Jim, I'm done. I'm ready to be the co-pilot, take over the reins, and let's get down to it. Let's talk some Ranger puck.
All right, so we're finished with our ode to Russ Cohen?
Yeah, the ode to Russ Cohen. Now, Adam Rader, I don't know. I think Russ Cohen and John really were the two main guy that wrote that book. Adam is always when I look at you, I see Enver Leeson. I'm like, why would you insult Enver Leeson like that? It's really not like it. Anyway, so let's get on. Let's talk about the Rangers, and I got a lot to say. I know a lot of the fans want to call in, and give us their views and what's going on with this team. It's, you know, Jim, it's some of it's very worrisome, and then they play a halfway decent game against the Bruins. You get back on board, but, you know, is it going to be a temporary thing, or is it going to be, it's just going to be an up-and-down season? You know, I picked this team to maybe make the playoffs, get in the first round, and I think that's the way it's going to go. So let's get down to it and let's talk to it. And I'm going to shut up for a second. I feel like I'm dominating the show once again.
No, it's okay. We're gonna get into everything tonight. Before I forget, I just want to wish one of our most tried and true listeners and readers, our buddy Frosty. Today is his 21st birthday. Happy birthday, Frosty. We hope you had a good one. And we appreciate you taking time out of your 21st birthday to sit down with us and listen to the show. So
yeah.
Hope it was good.
Frosty knows a lot about hockey for a 21-year-old. Are you sure he's
21-year-old.
Not 20? Well, how old is he?
21. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
He ain't 21. Come on.
Come on. We gotta be good to Frosty.
Oh, okay. All right. So,
all right. So as I'm sure most of you know, last week I had the pleasure of traveling to New York, and I was on Long Island for a few days. I stayed at the underground lair, if you will. Mouth was nice enough to open his home to me and had a great time. We had a lot of laughs despite the two Ranger games we watched together. The Islander and how do you know you're not the Jinx?
I could be.
we had a great time and a lot of fun, and we got to see Jolton Joe Fortunato and had him out for a while, and then we got to meet the great DB Maven, the voice of reason.
Yeah, and, he was wonderful.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun, and we painted the town on Thursday. We got to see B23 Blue Paint, good friend of mine. We watched got to take in a little bit of the World Series with him while we were in the city. So it was a great time, and Mouth, I thank you again for the hospitality. It was a great time, and the man took me to White Castle, and I don't think it gets much better than that.
Yeah, well, I could just tell you, folks, I did not have any White Castle. That stuff is, they call them belly bombers for a reason. Let me just say that.
I can attest to it. The man grabbed the Subway sub, walked into White Castle, sat down in a corner where nobody could see him, and watched me pile us off a plate full of castles. It was great. So anyway, hello to all you guys in the chat room tonight. I see Paulie D has shown up, and we're going to bring him on a little later because we're going to touch on a subject that he got into a little bit with Kotze last night, but we're going to spend a little more time on it tonight. So the last three games, we've got the Islander game, which was just awful. 3-1 loss out on the island, and I'll tell you what, it was the first game they've played this season without Gabrick, but anybody that blamed that game on just Gabrick being out, the Rangers were so bad against the Islanders. The passing was bad. They didn't work hard. And I think what bothered me more than anything is that they didn't play with any emotion at all through that whole game. They were flat. I just, how do you not get up for a game on the island? That's what I don't get, Mouth.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, the team that I feared that would come out came out a listless Ranger team, not interested in winning any battles whatsoever, not winning the battle on the boards, not looking like there's any sense of urgency. And you see Rolison start, and I start licking my chops. This guy has been terrible. I mean, especially on breakaways and in the shootout, he's looked hapless out there. And I'm saying, okay, let's get down to Beeswax. Let's take him on. And you're looking for the guys to step up, and nobody steps up. Not one Ranger forward I thought played decently. I think Delzato had a good game in that game, as he's had in a lot of games. You know, you're starting to find out the Islanders, whether you like it or not, they're a team that comes to play every night, and it's starting to show in the wins and loss column here. And this is going to be the Rangers are going to be forced to show up. And, you know, I just couldn't believe that the Rangers could only get a goal by P.A. Parenteau. That nobody else, a guy who's just brought up from Hartford, he scores the only goal, and that was it. That's all she wrote for the Rangers. It was a disgusting loss. And you made a good point, Jim, and I'll end by saying this, is that when the Rangers play the Islanders, there's no gratification out of that game as a fan, because if they win, it was expected. If they lose, it's an abomination and it's a stomach turner, which it was. Even though I didn't have those White Castles, it still was. It was quite a stressful loss early in the season.
Yeah, it's, you know, I equivocate it to playing when you were a kid. It's like playing a game against your little brother. If you win, it's big deal. I beat my little brother. But if you lose, you've got to live with it. And it's just, and I just don't understand how, you know, the Rangers and Islanders, this, you know, how they can come out in Nassau Coliseum where they had to have had 8,000 of their own fans cheering them on and just play like so listless. It was just, it was tough to watch. It really was.
I felt like I was in a Tom Rennie slumber party from last year. You know, it's just watching these games where it's just horrible. And, I'm taking a lot of heat because every game I say who to watch for, and that guy always scores. So on his team, there's only three guys to watch. Pozo, Tavares, and Matt Molson. And guess what? All three of them scored. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's rocket science that I picked the three guys, but it's still, those were the three guys that scored.
Yeah, and Pozo, is he the ugliest guy in the NHL or what?
Seriously, I mean, the guy looks like a Cro-Magnon. And then he has that mouthpiece with the gold filling in it. He looks absolutely bizarro. He looks ridiculous. You know? Yeah, he's Howie Rose ugly.
Yeah, he looks like one of
face
the
face for radio, fans. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
that's why I'm in radio. Let's face it.
There you go. Oh, you're a damn handsome man, and you know it. All right.
So, I'm so ugly they put me on internet radio. That's how bad I am.
All right, and then so enough about the Islander game. Then. You know, two nights later, they went out to Minnesota. They played the Wild. It was supposed to be Marian Gaborik's homecoming, and instead, I guess it was the Aaron Voros homecoming, if you will.
Oh.
And I didn't think they didn't play much better against the Wild. Only the result was better. They lost 3-2, but they played marginally better than they did in the Islander game. But they didn't have that wasn't hard to do beyond showing up and putting the skates on.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much that in that Wild game to enjoy either.
Yeah, well, although the Wild have a great home record, their road record is pitiful, and they're not really a good team. This again, just worrying me. I mean, these ridiculous. I don't know. This loss again, it's a disheartening loss. It's a game that, you know, the Wild don't, you know, they're not exactly a high flying team. And you got these guys, and I don't know what is the love fest with Aaron Voros. Seriously, Jim, I got to go check it. They may have won one game while this guy was in the lineup. He's like the reverse Sean Avery, as far as I'm concerned. We got to get him out of that lineup. Somebody feed Tortorella those stats. I can't take Voros. Voros, just say no Moros.
Yeah, I don't get the fascination with him either. I'm just, like you said, he's always fallen down. And I think I nicknamed him Asphalt Voros the other day because he's always getting run over.
Terrible.
But,
He takes low percentage shots. He when he hits a guy, he bounces off the guy. That doesn't even make impact with the guy. Doesn't do anything. So, Voros, geez, I start the young guys. I don't even want to see this guy in put him in Hartford.
The thing that concerns me is that I'm a little concerned that, you know, we're what, 15 games into the season now, I guess, right? From 15 games. And after the training camp they had and Tortorella preaching his message, I'm a little concerned that this team doesn't grasp the concept yet that they have to go out and play hard for 60 minutes every night. You know, I know it's still early in the season, but I can't understand how that message hasn't gotten through to them yet from the head coach.
I mean, isn't it the message, I mean, really, you know, to be summed up, is safe as death? I don't see any of that out there anymore. I don't see, again, I don't see them taking chances. And as much as Paulie D hates to see those two-on-ones and those three-on-ones, I don't see them. But, you know, that's great in one way, but I also don't see, you know, getting three goals in two games against the Islanders and Wild. They've got to go out there and force the issue. I mean, they can't be out of gas as far as the forecheck goes at this point in the season. I mean, come on. I mean, it's the, you know, and it's the mental thing that gets me. You got to win these games early in the season. You got to beat the Islanders. You got to beat them. I don't care without Gavrik and most Ranger fans. They got it in their head that this is an equation to the Jager situation. If Jager is not in the lineup, the Rangers aren't going to win, and I don't think that's the case. I think he's got a lot. They got a good supporting cast, much better than they had with Jager, in my opinion, and they got to come to play.
Oh, yeah, I agree. This is not the same situation as Jaromir Jagr being out of the lineup. This is a much more offensively skilled team than they've had in quite a few years. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, look, they're 9-5-1, and if you asked any one of us on September 30th if we'd take that, we'd say, where do I sign? But, you know, there's just, you know, we're looking at, they've played well at times, and you start to look at why they can't play that well all the time, why some nights they come out and just play so flat, and why they don't, like Mount said, why they don't force the issue all the time, and the constant, you know, you made a great point about the constant back checking. You know, they're always backpedaling in their own zone, and that may just be I think the great High C made the comment the other night that might just be the Rennie habit being hard to break.
Yeah, I think that's true. High C was right. I think there are times in the game where they, you know, some of these players that played under Rennie, they forget where they are and they just, you know, regress or go back to the Rennie style and I got to tell you, that backing in by the defenseman is about, I'm ready to put my fist through the TV. I really am. Because every time I see the Rangers defenseman backing up and converging around Lundqvist, I think of you know when a truck backs up and like 6 in the morning and you hear beep, beep, beep? I want to play that. Every time the Rangers defenseman back up, they got a challenge. They're not challenging. They're not doing the safe as death. They're playing it cautious. They're playing it, let Henrik bail us out. And in those two games, I'm not going to blame Henrik. He gave up 6 goals in 2 games. I'm not going to blame him. But until that Bruin game, which we'll get to in a little bit, he hasn't really like won them a game, you could say. Wow, he won the game for us. And they need to play more aggressively. And I just didn't see that in those two games.
You're right about Henrik. He hasn't come up with that one game where he really steals it. I thought he played very well against the Bruins on Sunday, but I see what you're saying as far as Henrik goes. I didn't give out the phone number. I forgot. 646-478-4692. We got plenty of time for phone calls tonight if you guys want to call in and we'll definitely get you guys on and hear what you have to say. We got a lot to talk about tonight, and a lot of good stuff coming up. We'll get into it in a little while. You know, before I want to mention this before we talk about the Bruins game, since that was a win. Well, I want to mention something. Pat LaFontaine, you guys remember we had him on the show about a month ago. He was running the New York City Marathon for charity, and he finished the marathon in 4 hours, 27 minutes, and 8 seconds.
Wow.
Which Yeah, Dan Jansen finished it in under 4 hours. He was having, I was reading the article about it, he had some blister problems and had to keep stopping to take care of them, and he finished in under 4 hours. Dan Jansen, the speed skater who was running with LaFontaine as part of the
I think I missed that part. I think I fell asleep at that part of the interview.
Okay.
So now, I thought you were talking about David Jansen, the old actor.
No. Here's the funny part. Pat LaFontaine finished the New York City Marathon in 4 hours, 27 minutes, and 8 seconds. Alanis Morissette, the singer, she ran the New York City Marathon, and she finished a minute behind Pat LaFontaine. I just thought that was funny. He's Pat LaFontaine. He's a Hall of Famer. He's in great shape. He does triathlons. And Alanis Morissette's a minute behind him. Down the stretch they come. It's Pat LaFontaine and Alanis Morissette with a hand in her pocket. And here they come.
Well, we gotta get in touch with Patty. We gotta have him on his show and rail him about that one. I mean, I hate Alanis Morissette. Oh God, I'd rather listen to a knife being cut through styrofoam than listen to her. But maybe she distracted Patty down the stretch with her singing. Maybe. I don't know what happened.
Next week on the show, Alanis Morissette.
Oh jeez. There's another one we can cross off that the mouth is expunged from our record of ever having them on. So, what's the age difference? Anybody know what the age difference between LaFontaine and Morissette? She might be a little bit younger, a little bit more spry.
If I had to guess, 10 years, but he does triathlons. I mean, he's Pat LaFontaine. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, hey, if you want to get on Pat LaFontaine, as far as I'm concerned, Pat LaFontaine is awesome.
No,
Alanis Morissette,
awesome.
Not so much.
I just thought it was funny that she was right behind him. But anyway, all right, let's talk about the Bruins game on Sunday afternoon, which at 12:45 Sunday afternoon, I was ranting and raving at the NHL for scheduling a hockey game on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of football season, because at 1 o'clock I had the Rangers and Bruins, and I had the Giants and Eagles, and I really couldn't make up my mind which game I was going to watch. I'm really not good at just sitting there and flipping and trying to. I get wrapped up in one game and I'll forget about the other, but thankfully, to the New York Football Giants, by 1:15 on Sunday afternoon, they had made my decision for me, and I was able to watch the entire Ranger game because that Giant game was just terrible. So the Rangers came out Sunday afternoon, played what I referred to as a Rennie-esque type game. Safe was life on Sunday, Mouth.
Yeah, and look. And it's funny because I saw Stan Fishface interview Lundqvist after the game, and he told Fishface that he enjoys those type of games where he's peppered with a lot of shots in like a 0-0 game where it really counts. And I'm thinking to myself, that was the whole Rennie era, and he prospered under that. Maybe Henrik's not so used to scoring, getting all these goals scored. But, you know, it's funny because the Rangers were there for averaging about 4 goals a game, and now we got 3-3-1. I don't know. But, again, it was without Gavrik. So, that game, you know, listen, a win is a win is a win. You know, they always say that, and it's true. I'll take it. Let's hope the Rangers can build on it, that Henrik, it's a groove starter, so to speak, for them, and they can get back on track tonight. They're playing Vancouver, correct? The Canucks. And hopefully they can shut down those Sedin sisters. And I got to tell you, the guy on the Canucks that's lost in the shuffle here, but he's having a terrific season, is Michael Samuelson, who was a Ranger, who was basically scouted and mentored by Nick Fetiu. And I think we lost Samuelson in the lockout year. He played overseas, and then he wound up signing with the Sharks, I think. So It'll be interesting game. No Luongo in net. He's got a rib injury, but I'm already previewing the game tonight. But, yes, the Bruins game. But I want to talk about some of the shenanigans that went on. And that Chara hit on Callahan was absurd. No penalty? I mean, come on. Take the blindfolds off, ref. I mean, this is ridiculous. Did you see that, Jim?
Yeah, and what really pissed me off about it is that Avery had a similar hit in the game, and naturally, you know, he got penalized for it. It wasn't even as bad as Chara's hit, but it was a similar type of hit, and he got sent to the box. Chara got nothing, and Callahan got up looking out his ear hole practically. I mean, he was wobbly to say the least.
Oh yeah, and no penalty, and I know that Chara is the tallest guy in the league, but it just comes back to, there's no repercussions. Take runs at our guys. Take runs at our goalies. There's no repercussions. I got to question a lot of these guys. And I, you know what? This was a point in the great Paulie D show, which I enjoy. I didn't get a chance to catch it live last night because I was in the Tribeca talking to Ron Greshner and Gilles Villemure. But Kotze made a good point about Avery. It's almost like Avery has a invisible straitjacket on, that he's so afraid that either A, he'll be persecuted for the refs if he even farts out there, or that he'll get benched if he does something a little bit crazy. And, you know, sometimes the game calls for crazy. I mean, the Rangers need a lot more crazy, I got to tell you. If Lundqvist gets run, you watch the game, I was yelling at the TV. You know, and of course everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy, including you. You know, why is this guy getting so emotional? But it's like, I want to say, listen, I want to strangle Mark Stahl. I love the guy. I think he's a great talent. But you got to get hot. You got to get that temper. And how do you do that? Maybe it's this generation of players, but they're running your $7 million goalie. If Lundqvist is out, it's over. Good night, nurse. I mean, you know, it's over. It's just, you know, I don't know what to do. I can scream and yell about it, but it doesn't get done on the ice. They're not listening to this show. Not many people listen to the show, but they especially are not listening to the show.
Well, we don't know that. They're sitting in their hotel room, and, you know, let me dial up that Blue Shirt Band of Radio and see what they're talking about. But I see what you're saying, and yeah, I think with Avery, it's just you know, time to release the hounds, turn them loose, and you know, take the reins off of him and let him play his game. Because really, when he's not playing his game, he's a pretty average player. He really is. When he's playing his game and he's mixing it up and he's getting in the goalie's face and he's agitating and drawing penalties, you know that's his game, and that's how he's effective, and he gets his scoring chances that way.
Yeah,
and you know, without that aspect of his game, he's really just a pretty average overall. He's a pretty average player.
Oh yeah, I mean, he needs to put the opposition goalie, get him off his game by chirping, doing what all these other bozos are doing. We got the head bozo. We won't even let him in the clown car. We won't even let him ride the tricycle. He can't do any of his bits because of some ridiculous persecution by the referees. We've got the number one agitator in the league, folks, maybe besides Jarkko Ruutu, and we're not using him. We've got to use all his talents, and that's one of his talents. Let's face it, he's not going to get 25 goals. You want Avery in there for 15 goals, whatever have you, and to agitate, to get these guys off their game. He should have been talking smack in that Islander game from start to finish. You go, how are you going to like playing Kansas City? He should have been on all of them. Tavares, oh, I heard you were a superstar. Yeah, nice going, superstar. He's been Rollison. You couldn't stop a beach ball with a boat, or he should have been saying. No.
How do you like playing in this dump?
Yeah, how do you like playing in his dump? I mean, come
on. Tavares, did you know what you were getting into when you got drafted? Did you realize you were going to play in a toilet? This place is terrible. Look at, how do you like playing in front of 3,000 people every night? You had more fans in London coming to the games. You're absolutely right.
That's just another issue. And I got a feeling that you later on, as especially if the Rangers don't start winning like on a regular basis, which I think they will. I think they're going to go up and they're going to go down all season. But if Avery maybe gets benched, or you're going to start to see some things come out. And I, you know, as much as Avery had said before the season that he loves Tortorella, you may see Avery start to speak out. I don't think he'll say such scathing words as he said about his former junior coach, Bruce Boudreau, but he may say something, you know, something like, you know, disparaging about Torts. Who knows?
No, I don't think he'll say those things to Tortorella.
You don't think so? The kid's crazy.
Yeah, that's for sure. For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, Bruce Boudreau, the coach of the Capitals, has a book coming out, and apparently the only thing in the worth mentioning in the book is that Sean Avery made a few, let's shall we say, disparaging remarks regarding Coach Boudreau's weight, and they weren't very kind. We'll put it that way.
why don't you just say it? Hey, it's not like we're condoning what he said, but he basically called Boudreau a fat pig who is blankety-blank getting fat, and blankety-blank he's going to die of a heart attack.
he said he was a lot
of blankety-blanks in there. I felt like we're doing match game.
Said he was the fattest bleeping bleep in the league, I think, or something like that.
I mean, this is a couple of years back, and I guess more than a couple of years back. But why Boudreau would put that in his book, it looks, I don't know, anyway. So that's, you know, there, as I say.
It's the way to sell books.
That's true. Sean Avery, I'm telling you, he equals, you know, you want to get some heat about something, put Sean Avery's name in there, and you get the people they flock.
That's right. He's got magnetism. All right, so We are past 8 o'clock. We have just under an hour to go. Phone number to call, 646-478-4692. And plenty of time for phone calls. We're going to get into a couple of different subjects, and a couple of them are somewhat heated debates that I've seen over the couple of the topics we're going to cover. The first one, and I know this is one of Mouth's favorites, is Ed Releasing. And I was hunting around the Ranger blogosphere today, and I came across the HF board. And, Mouth, you got into it with some guys over there about Ed Releasing. I've never seen such hatred for a third line. You know, a guy that's, you know, just trying to make his way as a third line, or, you know, occasionally on the first line, bouncing back and forth. And, you know, I've never seen such venom towards a poor guy. I mean, Lauri Korpikoski, he's got zero goals, zero assists. He's been scratched. You call him Itchy Korpikoski. But, you know, for some reason, Edvard Leeson is getting, or as we call it, Jackie Leeson. As
Jackie
he was still nicknamed. Jackie Leeson.
Sorry, George Randall. Yeah. Well, I think the thing with Edvard. Jackie Leeson, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, he may have the last hearty har-har on the Ranger fans that doubt him. I'm not saying this guy is going to become an elite player. I have to go on what I see, and straight up for Lauri Korpikoski, this is a good trade. Now, I also agree with you. I have never seen this kind of controversy surrounding, basically, to me, what is a third-line player. I think if you look at his highlight reel that's wandering around YouTube, you see this guy is this offensive dynamo, and I think that is not the case, and I guess a lot of people were really excited about his offensive ability, and But yes, every time it's almost like Ranger fans are some Ranger fans. I won't say all because there are. They'd rather see a guy fail and then be right than be wrong. And you know, they will just like there's a contingent out there that doesn't want to see the guy score. And if he does score, rather than eat crow and say I was wrong, it's like, oh, it was a garbage goal. It wasn't the goal that counted. You know, it hit off the ref's butt. He's lucky. And then when he got moved over to the first line, now you see Tortorella entering and saying, listen, this guy's being rewarded. And to me, that's the indicator that the guy's playing well. It's not whether Joe from Hoboken or Fred from Erster Bay or, whether they like it or not. But when the coach is rewarding him, and I think there are guys that are so hyped on his promise offensively and some of the sick moves that you see on his highlight reel, they're so pro-envelope and they're off the over the top. And then there are people like he's Zheredev, and you're being fooled, and there's nothing to him. But as straight up trade, great move. He's young. He's going to develop, and maybe he can be a second, third line player. That's what I want. I want to see the young guys develop. That's the only reason I'm here. I'm not here because I think the Rangers are going to make the Cup this year. I'm here, and I watch every game. And Jim, I told you this when I saw you. I look at the young guys, and I evaluate the young guys. I cannot waste time evaluating the dead weight on this team, and that's Michael Roosevelt, who, you know, I defended last year, but he's sticking to join up. Wade Redden, Chris Drury, and you got me on that. Finally, I've given up on Chris Drury. I cannot evaluate these guys because they're not part of the Rangers' future. They're part of the Rangers' problem. They're just much better players they can get for these guys, but we're stuck with them. And that is the worst part of it. We're stuck with these guys. And so when I look at the game, how did Delzato play? How did Gilroy play? Even to Lundqvist, who's still, I think, part of an equation for us. How did Boyle play? How did Anisimov play? This is what I'm looking at every game. The wins I feel good about, but I'm looking at the long-distance picture.
I think part of the problem, too, with Leeson is that, like you said, it's a bit of a, call it Zheredev fatigue, maybe, and some people see him as a similar player. And I think the other part of it is that Korpakoski was a first-round pick, and everybody gets all worked up over, first-round pick. But, you know, everybody's, you know, when this trade was made, it was pretty much the universal school of thought that Enver Leeson had more of an offensive upside, and that's why the Rangers were willing to trade Korpakoski. And quite honestly, let's say that trade doesn't get made, Mouth. Okay, let's say that Lauri Korpakoski is still a New York Ranger today. Where does he fit on this team?
No way.
I mean, realistically, is he the first line center instead of Dubinsky or Prospel? No. Is he the second line center? No. Is he the third line center? Well, no. That's the captain's spot now, right. Which we'll get into in a few minutes. Is he the fourth line center? Well, if he is, then you know, okay, big deal. You drafted a guy first in the first round overall to play on the fourth line with Donald Brashear. And Aaron Voros, you know, I just think that Ranger fans are just way too attached to these first round picks sometimes, and I just don't think Korpakoski was going to work out here, and I think it was a good deal, and I think Leeson's played well enough that he's getting better. We talked about this last week that now he's being taught the game of hockey, which wasn't happening in Phoenix. It just wasn't, not under the Gretzky regime.
It's a funny thing, you know, and I love hockey's future board. I really do, because these guys know their prospects and they know everything. They're keyed in. The board is especially for Ranger prospects. Let's face it, it's hockey's future. And I think they get attached. They covet the draft picks. They covet the prospects, and they lose the big picture. I'm going to give you a for instance that happened to me on the board. Again, I love the guys. I love talking. I love any kind of discourse, you know, without, you know, nonsense. But I'll give you a for instance. I talked about a possible trade to get Peter Mueller, who is another guy on Phoenix who was left for dead in Phoenix. The guy has been, you know, he's had a great rookie season. He had a disappointing sophomore season, but I think the guy is a center iceman. The Rangers need young center iceman. They got Anisimov, but they could use this Peter Mueller. I think a change of scenery would do this guy good. And I actually asked Russ Cohen. I said, what do you think the Rangers, if he would and it's funny because I had just gone to Hockey's Future Board before this, and their headline, now, I swear to God, was Peter Mueller, what would you trade for him? And I'm like, didn't I propose this on a thing? So anyway, he was a healthy scratch last night. So I asked Russ Cohen, I said, Russ, what do you think? Now, first of all, people railed me. You're never going to get Peter Mueller. Don Maloney's a genius. Why don't you just ask for Stamkos? Why don't you ask for Hedman? Why don't you ask for this? Peter Mueller is untouchable. He's the next Ovechkin. It took Ovechkin a couple of years. All this stuff. So then I asked Russ Cohen, what would it take? Well, you know, Russ, I told you, he's my go-to guy. Sorry, Jez. But he says, it would probably take it would take a second-round pick and Derek Stepan to get Peter Mueller in a Ranger uniform right now. Now, this is if both parties were interested. I don't know if they are. And especially that Phoenix is going into a they've sent their rookies down, their youth down. They're going with a veteran team. I think they're pressed to put a winning team on the ice this year, to make the playoffs at least. So this looks like the direct. So now I preface it. So anyway, so now I get this. No way. No way am I giving up a second-round pick and Derek Stepan to get Peter Mueller. But you just told me, on the other hand, the guy is great. He's Ovechkin. He's Stamkos. Wouldn't you trade? I mean, Derek Stepan, I know he's a great prospect, but he's like 5 years away. I mean, seriously. And a second-round pick? I'm not so – I don't hold a second-round pick to such a high level that these guys that are involved in, like a prospect board or that kind of mentality. I mean, what do you think about it?
Well, you know, we've talked about this before. I just think that, you know, hockey's not like football. We're trading away a number one draft pick or even a second round draft pick, you know, is detrimental to building your future. I just think that, you know, you're talking, when you draft a guy in the first or second round, you're talking about, you know, he's probably 4 or 5 years away, maybe. And a lot can happen in 4 or 5 years. I mean, the Rangers got Brian Boyle for a third round pick next year. Everybody was screaming, how can we trade a third round pick? This guy's going to replace Blair Betts. What are the Rangers nuts? Trade away a third round pick. I got news for you. Brian Boyle, to me, is one of the biggest surprises of the early season. I think he's played very well.
I think he's definitely come to play every game for sure.
Everybody gets all excited about third round picks. Name me the last 5 third round picks for the Rangers, and how many, or better yet, name me the first 5 third round picks of the 2000s, and tell me, you know, this decade, and tell me where they are now, who they're playing for, if they're even still in hockey. You know, I guarantee you at least 2 of them are selling insurance somewhere, but I don't get quite as attached to draft picks as other Ranger fans do.
And I think it just goes back, winds it around the bend, so to speak, and gets it right back to the end of the lease. And the fact that we gave up Corpedo, which may be one of the worst nicknames ever given to a Ranger for a guy who was an absolute nothing. You know, there's just one, it kind of just says, you know, he was a draft pick, and we, you know, the whole bit. And so I don't get hung up on that. I'd rather bring in a guy in now that's 21 years old that I know can score in the NHL and has tremendous, the guy's not afraid to go in the crease And, you know, I'm not going to make this the Peter Mueller show. I'm just saying, look into it. We got plenty of bargaining chips. We got to unload some of these defensemen. Let's bring this kid in here. All right, I'm done.
All right, so now come on to the next hot topic of evening. And it's already been a heated discussion in the chat room I've been watching here. I don't know if you've been following along.
Oh, they're flipping out in there.
But let's talk about Chris Drury. And basically, I've titled this segment, Chris Drury, Enlighten Me. And the reason for that is because there are a lot of Ranger fans that will defend Chris Drury to the ends of the earth. And the minute Chris Drury's name comes up, he's the captain, he's this, he's that, you don't know what you're talking about, he's Chris Drury. And then there's the other half. There was also a spirited debate on the HF boards the other day about taking away the C from Chris Drury and looking to somebody else. And oh, by the way, we didn't mention, in case you didn't hear, Vinny Prospel was given the other A this afternoon. I don't know if...
Oh, that's good. Should be the
that.
Center. I mean, he should be the captain. I mean, I like the way Vinny gets in the ref's faces and makes the argument, makes the pleas. We need an advocate on the ice like that. We don't have an advocate. We haven't had an advocate in a long, long time on that ice to be the voice of their own.
Yeah, so like I said, I'm titling this Enlighten Me because Chris Drury, what I see is, now I know he's not getting the power play time that he used to, and I know he's not playing on the first line, and I know that's why his numbers are down. And yes, he does all... He may do the little things, you know, he blocks shots. Okay, he blocks shots. So do a lot of other guys. And, yeah, he plays on the penalty kill. Well, so do a lot of other guys. He's not great on faceoffs. He's right around 50%. And for the first week, about the first 2-3 weeks of the season, he was well under 50%. Vinny Prospel was their best faceoff guy the early parts of the season. So I'm trying to figure out what is the attachment to Chris Drury? What am I missing about Chris Drury's game? Enlighten me. Paulie started to talk about this with Kotze last night, and Paulie is on. For once, Paulie, Jim, I got to agree with you here. I'm an X's and O's guy, but I got to agree with you. Paulie said to Kotze that he thinks that they should take the C away from Drury, and Kotze's response was, well, good luck, and then they kind of moved on to a different subject. And I don't know if you could really take the C off a guy's chest a month into the season. I'm not even saying that. I'm just trying to figure out what I'm missing about Chris Drury that is so friggin' fantastic. Joe Micheletti was talking I lost my train of thought there for a second. Joe Micheletti the other night called him Captain Clutch. Well, you know what? That Captain Clutch nickname, do I need to remind everybody when that Captain Clutch nickname came about? Yeah, when he was with Buffalo and knocked the Rangers out of the playoffs. I haven't seen 1 ounce of Captain Clutch since he put his name on that $300 million contract 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So, again, I'm here. I'm reaching out to the Ranger fans, to my brethren, to my Blue Shirt Banter Radio crowd, all 2 million of you listening around the world. I'm on my feet with my hands to the air. Enlighten me on Chris Drury. What am I missing about Chris Drury? And on that note, we're going to bring in our first phone caller of the evening. I'm going to bring in the great, wonderful, terrific Paulie D. Paulie, welcome to the program.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. I hope you guys had fun last week. I didn't see Mouth Show on last Wednesday. Want to say that I was thinking of you during the Islander game, and I can only imagine in my head what foul language you guys were using.
Well, Paulie, let me tell you a quick story. We go to this bar in Farmingdale, Long Island, right? Now, I flew into LaGuardia. I grabbed a cab and hopped the Long Island Railroad out to Farmingdale. I get off the train. I go walking into this bar, and I was waiting for Joe and for Mouth to show up. There's nobody in the place, maybe 10 people. So I sit down at this little like a service bar area, and there's 3 TVs in front of me, and I'm just sitting there, and then Joe shows up a few minutes later, and then Mouth shows up, and the three of us pretty much commandeer this little service bar area. The three of us are spread out, and we're sitting there BSing, and then the Ranger game comes on, and then the crowd starts filing in for the Yankee game. And when I say crowd, I mean crowd. There had to be, what, Mouth, at least 200-300 people in there watching the Yankees?
Yeah, it was packed like sardines.
Yeah, I mean, literally, like, and it was funny because we couldn't see all these people behind us. We're focused on the game. And I stand up after the Rangers' first period and turn around, and, I mean, there's just masses of people. And meanwhile, we've got this little radius that nobody will come in because we're watching the Ranger game and everybody else is watching the Yankee game. So, yeah,
we're
pretty
cheering. And we're cheering, and people don't understand it because they're all watching the Yankee game where nothing happened. You know, not that there was much to cheer about. But if it's a good hit, I'm going, yeah, and everybody's looking at me like, what is this guy saying, yeah? And a guy across from me, he went, yeah. And I said, he goes, I don't even know what I'm saying yeah for, but it sounded pretty good. So, you know, but, yeah, we were focused. There was only two TVs probably out of 35 in that place that had the game on, and we were just focused on that. Baseball was just, I didn't even care. I mean, you know, but, yeah, it was a good time. You know, there wasn't that much foul language, Paulie. I can't believe that you think that we would go to the gutter, so to speak.
I really wish I was there. That game brought out every bad word I could possibly think of. I probably made up a few along the way.
Oh, isn't that great? You make up words like the old man in Christmas Story.
I'm trying to tell you, man. That game made me sick to my stomach. I almost you ever get to the point where you want to snap the remote control? That's where I was,
yeah.
Man. I had to get up and walk away. You know, Jim, it's always a pleasure to be on Blue Shirt Banter, and I don't want to go backwards. I know you're talking about Chris Drury.
It's usually when he starts nice like this, Mouth, that then he says, "But I got to disagree with you, gentlemen."
Yeah.
Usually he starts with. He warms up in the bullpen with a couple of, oh, I love Blue Shirt Beta Radio. You guys are the best, but I friggin' disagree with you, and here's why.
No, I got to tell you, Jim, the thing with Drury, you know what?
Enlighten me, Paulie.
Yeah, you know, we've discussed this so many times. Listen, he's a good third-line center. He wins some draws. He does the little things. My point with Kotze last night was, listen, I don't think that I just don't think that he is captain's material for our team. And I love the fact, and the guys in the chat room and you guys hit the nail on the head, and I guess I'm not the only one seeing it, but I am falling in Ranger love with Vinny Prospel. The guy talking. He's talking to the kids. Making a point. He seems like he cares. If I can get that out of Drury, I wouldn't feel that way. I just don't. Drury bites on his mouth guard the whole time. He sucks on the ice for pretty much the. You know what? When in Gabrick's absence, that's when I expect my captain to stand up, punch somebody in the mouth. Do something good. Score a freaking goal. Do something.
Now, granted, as Ranger fans, we are spoiled as far as what a captain should be. And I understand that. So I will never, ever attempt to compare a captain to the captain. But when, in my opinion, and this is just me, Jim hockey fan, you know, Ranger fan forever. But my opinion of the captain of a hockey team is that when you are losing to the New York Islanders 3-1 and you're playing listless and just lifeless and awful, your captain is supposed to bring that emotional lift. He's supposed to find a way. He puts you on his back and says, follow me. Here we go. You know, something. Throw a hit, an elbow. Even if you got it, I wouldn't care if he took a double minor for something, but get the team fired up. Take anything, and he just doesn't do that. And yes, he blocks shots. He does he does some of the little things, but I just don't see. I just don't see what is so terrific about Chris Drury. And as a captain, I just don't think he's like you said, Paulie. I just don't see him as captain material for the Rangers. maybe for the Ottawa Senators or the Colorado Avalanche where he played before, maybe. But you know, when I think of the captain of the team, you know, he should provide that emotional lift. He should do so. He should step onto the ice and think, how am I going to turn this around? How am I going to get us out of this hole? How am I going to make this not the worst game we've played all year against the Islanders, for God's sakes?
And I couldn't agree with you more. And that's exactly...
Well, Paulie, what's wanted... having you on if you're just going to agree with me?
Well, great minds think alike. I got to agree with you. I think the captain really, you know, besides the emotion, because there are some guys, are, you know, they give you a look in the room and you know it's, you know, it's time to get it on. And not in a sexual way, but as far as the hockey game goes. But you really got to have a captain that has the convey the hate to lose mentality. I feel that this is the and now you have a coach, a fiery coach. Let's say this guy is, I mean, he's a powder keg, and you know he hates to lose. He won't even do the interviews after the game after a disappointing loss. You need, as a captain, to be that conduit from the coach into the room. And Tortorella has gone on record as saying that it's Drury's room. Okay. Where he's failing miserably off the ice is he has to convey the hate-to-lose mentality. This is what you need. As fans, we sit there and we hate it. I mean, like Paulie said, you wanted to bust the remote after that loss. And meanwhile, me and Jim are in Farmingdale, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from the mausoleum, and we got to see these Islander fans all happy and giddy with their disgusting jerseys, you know, and these guys walking in all happy. It made my – I was like, we got to get out of here before I throw a punch. I mean, it was just – so if we care that much, we need our captain to care even more. It's his job. It's his profession. It's a team sport. Where is the warrior mentality? There is none with Chris Drury. I don't know why he's the captain. I can't figure it out. He was supposed to be a clutch player. He's not with the Rangers. He's just a disappointment as a captain. You need a guy like you're talking, Paulie. I've been saying possible from the beginning. He's the guy in the ref's face. He's the guy saying, no, that goal was in. Don't give us any craziness here. Or that wasn't a penalty. What are you watching? That's the guy you need. He's your advocate on the ice, and he's also the coach's conduit to the players. He failed on all accounts.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think Jim, I think you hit it all. You put it all together. As a captain of a hockey team, or actually a captain of any team, is when things are bad, when things don't look good, when the team is struggling, when there's a problem, the captain needs to lead by doing something. And sometimes it might not be the best thing, but do something. And that's the thing with Drury, I think we all see, is he doesn't do anything. Drury doesn't go out there and make a huge hit or just give it something where we say, you know, that's what we're looking for in a captain. Turn this game around somehow, some way. Do whatever you got to do. And, you know, we've talked about so many times how many times Lundqvist has been ran into, and guys like Redden and Staal and Drury, they do nothing about it. You know, whatever it is, do something. Make a statement. Let the other players know. Get them fired up somehow that we're not going to, you know, be disgraced to a team that has one flipping win in 10 games. It's just terrible to me. It just drives me crazy. And the other thing is, I think Gabrick does more for the team than Drury does. And it's Gabrick, you know, I mean, the guy is here for 15 games. It's ridiculous. I think they strip him. They strip Modano. the Dallas Stars stripped Mike Modano of the captaincy and gave it to Brendan Morrow.
All right, and he's a Hall of Famer, and he's going to, you know, he's probably, he is the greatest American-born player ever. And they stripped him.
I can't see why we don't strip him.
Why don't we strip Chris Drury? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. But, you know way this, how stubborn this Ranger management and goes. So that isn't going to happen, I don't think. Like Cotton
said, I think,
good luck with that.
And I think the reason for that is two or threefold. And we heard during the summer about how Tortorella was trying to forge that relationship with Drury. And we talked about how important that is when you have an abrasive coach like Tortorella, how important it is for him to have the captain of the team on his side. And I just think it's at this point right now, it would send the wrong message. So unfortunately, I think for now they're going to have to live with it. And, that, I think that's just the way it is, for better or worse. But like I said, I was, I've seen a lot of debate about Chris Drury. I've been seeing it for months on our website and other websites and chat rooms here and conversations that we've had on the air. And I'm just, at this point, I'm just looking to be enlightened.
I can be honest with you, Jim. I've honestly really never talked to or spoke to anybody who felt that Chris Drury was the right captain for this team. And that's just, you know, with the people that I'm in contact with and the places that, you know, the fans that I talk to, most of them, you know, 9 out of 10 agree with us. You know, the first year, you know, maybe, but it's gotten to a point where all the excuses are now gone. And yes, you know what, Mouth? We all figured out that Chris Drury is not going to be a 45-goal scorer for us. And I don't think that's what we're looking at. We're looking at just the overall picture of what positive influence does this guy bring to the team on the ice. Listen, there's no doubt he's a Pat LaFontaine classy individual. He knows the right things to say. He knows how to speak to the media when he has to. He's probably very much a gentleman and a good representative. And that's probably why he is the captain. The problem is he doesn't bring anything to the team on the ice. And I feel, my personal opinion, is a captain on the ice is what the Rangers need, not a captain to be diplomatic and to be a gentleman and to, you know, handle that side of the game, which I'm sure is much more important to management and things like that, because you want to maintain a classy, respectful.
Well, you know what?
You know what I mean?
Paul, you know what? Jim is going to disagree with you because he had talked about this. Jim, tell me, give me your take with as far as Drury as a guy that deals with the media and stuff like that.
I was kind of rolling my eyes a little bit when Paulie said that.
Paulie may not know about it, so why don't you?
Two quick stories about Drury with the media. I forget which game it was. Probably the Coyotes game. I think the Rangers were up 2-0 at the end of the first period. And Drury comes off the ice, and he's being interviewed by Al Troutwig. And he just acted like such an a-hole to Troutwig. And I'm no Troutwig apologist. Mouth will tell you how I really feel about Troutwig. I'm not a fan of his either. But, you know, and Troutwig's asking him the general, you know, of natural questions that he's going to ask everybody after every period of every game from now until the Rangers, you know, until the year 2100. You know, what well in the first period, what didn't go well? And he said, you're up 2-0, so where do you go from here? And Drury just looked at him like and said something to the effect of, now we go out and get the third one, and just walked away from him. And it was just – he just comes off like an a-hole, to be honest with you. And I don't know if you're familiar with Jane McManus. She used to be Rick Carpinello's kind of – his backup on his Rangers blog on Lohud. And she had done on a day off or something like that. The Rangers weren't playing. This was late last season. She put up a – or it might have been during the off season. I don't remember – she put up a little like a match game where she put up five quotes from players, or three quotes, or maybe it was, and you had to match them with who said it. And one of them was, "You brought me out of the locker room to ask me that," and it was Chris Drury. And she said basically that she didn't know if Drury was having a bad day or if that's just the way he was, but, you know, apparently he was pretty rude to her. So I'm not sure he's all that great with the media. Maybe occasionally he does say the right things, Paulie, like, you know, when he said, you know, he did make comments that everybody liked hearing about Brashear, that, you know, he was a Ranger now, and if anybody had a problem with it, they could come see him. Well, that's great. The problem is, who do we go see if we have a problem with Drury being a Ranger? That's what I want to know. Who do I talk to about that? But so I'm not sure he's quite
the
as
guy
good
might be. Yeah, he might be an all around bad apple.
Now, you know, I don't want to turn this into, you know, the Chris Drury. You know, for all I know, he is a very nice guy, and maybe he just doesn't like being interviewed, or maybe those were just two bad instances with Chris Drury. But I don't see him quite as diplomatic as you do. But and everything else we've talked about, I agree with you. And let's get another phone call in. I think this is pretty sure this is James. James, are you there? Welcome to Blue Shirt Banner Radio.
Hey Jim, how's it going? How's it going, everyone?
How are you tonight?
I'm okay. I got home a little late. I didn't know you guys started later, so the only thing I heard so far is the Drury. Well, not bashing, but the Drury conversation that was going on. And I got to agree with you guys. Drury, it doesn't seem he's cut from the same cloth as the captains in the NHL. I mean, a lot of them you see are very vocal, and you see that they do, like you say, do things on the ice, you know, and you see them arguing with the official, or they want to know why is this happening, or why that, you know, you see them questioning things, basically. And Drury, you basically see him as like they call, like, those quiet leaders, which Leach was, kind of. And those guys I don't see making good captains, because look what happened with Leach. One of the greatest Ranger probably ever, or one of the top three, just wasn't cut out to be a captain. And I know Drury was a captain on, I think it was in Buffalo, but I don't know. I guess it takes certain, especially in New York City. I mean, you got to have a guy who has a little bit of fire, and I think it has to be a guy who's kind of coincides with the coach and his attitude and his, you know, way of doing it. And we know Tortorella is a fiery guy, and maybe he wants to see a fiery type of you know, captain out there too. You know, I mean, I think that's what the fans would want to see, instead of just this, you know, okay, well, we'll follow by example or something like that. I like the more of the, you know, wear that emotion on your sleeve to a point, but basically, you know, show these guys that, you know, I'm leading this team, and you have a problem, we're going to take care of it. And instead of the, you know, just follow what I'm, you know, what I'm doing, or something like, you know, to that effect.
Well, James, I'll agree with you to a certain extent on Leach, but Leach was also in a tough position because he had some pretty big shoes to fill.
Absolutely.
And he made it pretty, you know, and he just, I think he was more uncomfortable just following Messier than he was being captain of the Rangers. If Brian Leach was on this team today, I don't think it would have been as big a problem for him to be the captain. I just think it was the shoes he had to fill.
Yeah, and another thing, you know, Jim, you're right. You know, I have to agree with you there. And another thing is, maybe it's the team, the personnel who you're playing with also. Maybe now that,
sure,
this,
yeah,
that this team is actually looking okay. I mean, yeah, we've had a little slide here. We knew it was going to happen. And they seem all to still be playing decently. And we do have, our little pitfalls here and there. But, you know, right now, I guess the atmosphere around, you know, with the fans and everybody, everything is still good. Whereas those years when Leach did, you know, we were coming off a couple of missed playoffs, and then we still missed the playoffs a couple more years, and the frustration probably was with, you know, with all the players. And then, like you said, Leach had to fill Mess's shoes, and that didn't work out. And, you know, I guess he couldn't wait to dump off that seat back when Mess came back.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you're talking about the quiet leadership and whether or not that works. I think that could work, but I don't see that from Drury either.
Right. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, this sounds like a stupid story, but real quick, I was working at a Blockbuster when I was, you know, younger. And when I first started working there,
I
worked at Blockbuster. But the guy who was the manager, everybody said, he's such a great leader. Oh, you're going to love this guy. The guy barely spoke to me. The guy didn't tell me anything. I was lost half the time. And you're talking about a place that all you do is put tapes back on the wall and take some customers. And still there were things that were, I totally didn't even know what the hell I was doing. And I kept saying to myself, is this guy supposed to be the great leader? I'm supposed to be following? He doesn't tell me a damn thing. And I'd rather have a guy that's going to talk and tell me, yo, get over here, look at this and do this, and we need to do this. And this, you know, just and I'm thinking of it in a hockey sense, because I played on a roller league years ago and stuff, and I was actually a captain because I have a big mouth, like the mouth over there, right? And I always got my point across, and I was always angry, and I did wear my emotions on my sleeve. I mean, not to the point where you know, people wanted to kill me or nothing, but just enough to the point to show, hey, I give a crap, and I'm going to say something. If something doesn't look right to me and something's not being done about it, I'm not going to sit there and take it. I'm not going to let my teammates take it. I'm going to go and fight for them, and I think that's what I'd like to see out of a captain of my team.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. I thought one of the great guys that we had after Messier, and I know I've said this 1,000 times, as far as that captaincy goes, you know, following Messier, I think you look at someone like Brendan Shanahan. That's what I think the team needs, a Brendan Shanahan-type player. We need – I mean, people could say what they want to say. The bottom line is you're in the one of the biggest stages, if not the biggest stage. It's probably not the biggest stage in the game of hockey, but it's still a real big stage. And the bottom line is – you need exactly that, James, exactly what we talked about.
Right.
This team needs a fiery leader who leads by example, whether right, wrong, or in between. Listen, Mets made a lot of mistakes out there. Mets would say don't take any penalties and then throw an elbow. But the bottom line is the guy led by example. He did what he had to do. If he had to bite your nose off your face and take 5 minutes to make his team wake up, then that's what he did. And that's what the New York Rangers need right now, I think. And I bet you it makes them a better team.
I agree with that.
I mean, look, like I said, I don't want to compare. I try not to compare anybody to Mark Messier. But as an example, Paulie, you make a great point. You know, go back to trying to take a big walk down memory lane, but go back to the 1994 Eastern Conference Finals. The Rangers lose game one in tough fashion, right? The first shift on the ice in game two, what does Messier do? He flattens Scott Stevens. I don't think there's a Ranger fan alive who was alive then and old enough to be watching that game. I don't think there's a Ranger fan that doesn't remember that hit. He sent the message that, you know what, you got us in game one, but game two is going to be a different story. And
right,
he set the tone,
and I think that's what guys want to see is that, you know, follow that guy who's going to set that tone for that game and make them believe. I mean, Mark Messier is the guy who made that team believe. I mean, no matter what it was, I mean, we had that big curse going, you know, for us for all those years, and these guys believed they were going to win. And like you was it Joe that was talking about the Shanahan? Like you say, nobody's going to fill Messier's shoes, but a guy like Shanahan who is respected in that, you know, I guess throughout the league, and you have guys following him, and that's what I keep thinking about. You know, maybe these guys, I mean, I'm sure they respect Drury, but do they follow? In other words, are they buying into maybe the way Drury does things? Maybe they don't. Maybe they see, I mean, we're not there to see it, but maybe they see some things that we, you know, we don't, and they're not really buying into maybe the type of leader he is, and they may need a change in that. And I mean, if Callahan wasn't so young, I'd say go with Callahan. That guy at that little statue, I mean, he throws himself around. He does everything he can to make them win.
I agree, but Callahan's got to pick up his production before that could happen. And I've said all along that I think Ryan Callahan is a future captain of the Rangers, but he's got to, his numbers on the ice have to improve if that's ever going to happen. And just a real quick finish up on that Messier thought. You know, he stepped on the ice in game two and delivered that message, and he didn't do it to Valerie Zelopukhin or anybody like that. He picked Scott Stevens, the captain of the Devils, the biggest guy on the team probably, maybe except for maybe Danico, and he flattened him, and he got the crowd into it, he got the team into it, and the message was delivered, and they won that game.
Right.
And that's what you need from your captain. And, you know, Drury, you need that emotional lift, and I just don't think the Rangers get it from Drury. James, we're gonna take a couple of more calls before we finish up tonight. We only got a few minutes,
sure.
We got about 15 minutes to go.
Definitely.
I appreciate you calling in. I'm sorry you didn't know we started early. No. It was a very last minute thing because we had John Halligan on, and he wanted to be on at 7 o'clock, and we wanted to accommodate him because we've been trying to chase him down for a few months now. So, but we'll be back 8 o'clock next week at our regular time.
You got it, guys. Looking forward to it. Mouth, I'll call you tomorrow. I'll be on there calling you up tomorrow night.
All right. We'll
All right,
talk.
Guys. You take
Thank
it easy.
So
Have a
much.
Good night.
Talk to you tomorrow, James.
All
good
right.
night.
Bye-bye, guys.
I got to tell you, James,
okay.
What a good call there. I like that.
James is always good. James is always
He's
good.
Always...
We never have to worry about James, that's for sure. So we got about 15 minutes to go, and I just I think we've good conversation on the Drury, on Chris Drury, and the thing is, nobody's enlightened me.
Everybody's in agreement with you, really. I mean,
I'm just as stupid on Chris Drury as I was a half an hour ago, unfortunately.
Well, you know, the only thing, I think I was the last holdout as far as Drury goes. I mean, I know you say block shots. On the ice, he seems to care a little bit. But it's just not enough. Last year when he scored that goal with the broken hand, yeah. Drury, even the word Drury just kind of brings it down. How are you feeling tonight? Yeah, a little bit Drury. How's the weather out there? Drury and cold. So, yeah, I got to agree with Frosty. I'm Druried out. Let's move on.
You know, I got something I want to bring up to you guys that I had noticed a couple of days ago. I got to tell you that I like what Tortorella has done with Higgins. And you might be like, what the hell are you talking about? He benched him in the whole nine. I think, because I know another hot topic with the Rangers is Higgins, and unfortunately I didn't get to it last night, but I want to get your – hear what you guys have to say about Higgins. He's not scored a goal. I don't think he has many points.
Two.
But I'm starting to see him come around, if that's the right terminology here, where he's starting to do the little things right, and I'm starting to see Tortorella try to – and Kotze last night is little adamant, he's not crazy about the whole line mixing, constantly line mixing. He thinks that it's tough, you know, creating the chemistries that way. But with Higgins, I think Tortorella is really trying to mentor Higgins into getting refocused and becoming a New York Ranger. It's probably, you know, it's been a tough transition for him, so they say. What do you guys think about Higgins? Do you think he's going to come around? Because I tell you what, he does have some fantastic natural abilities. First of all, he can be very strong on the puck when he wants to be. And he's got some decent hands. And I want to kind of know what you guys are thinking about Higgins and what's going on there.
Well, if I can go first, my opinion is pretty quick on Higgins. I think that the most important thing about Chris Higgins right now is that Tortorella, even though he believes in him, Tortorella believes in Chris Higgins, and that's why he's getting so much ice time. He was playing the other night with the second line. I read earlier today he might play with the first line tonight. They are really trying to force feed him on the ice to get him that first goal, because I think once that happens and the monkey's off his back, he'll be fine. But I think the most important thing with Chris Higgins is that Tortorella believes in him. He's called him out a few times in the press, but I don't think he'd do that if he didn't believe in him. Mouth, what do you think?
Wow. If you were reading my blog this week, I've had enough. I've had enough. You know, you can't go 15, 20 games without a goal. There's something wrong. I don't know what it is. I agree with Paul. There's times when he looks like he's hustling and he's involved. And I like the way, you know, it's Tortorella. I can't believe Tortorella's handling the situation as calmly as he is. He surely treated Higgins a lot better than he's treated Dubinsky. And that basically was because of the holdout. But the thing is I can't wait any longer. But the problem is you can't trade him. I mean, maybe at the deadline you can chip him off because he's unrestricted at the end of it. But who's going to want a guy who's got 4 goals if he's got that much? I hope
he's got 4 goals.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong. I have no answer. I was very disheartened by that play that they showed in the one game where he was lazy on the back check. I blew a fuse on that one. But I don't think that is indicative of how he plays night after night. I think he got caught with his pants down, so to speak, on that little thing. But the thing is, you know, I was warned. I was warned about this when he was traded. Now, people don't realize, they say, oh, you traded Higgins for Gomez. You got ripped off. No. For the Ranger fan, the educated Ranger fan, we all know this made room for Gavrik to be signed. So Higgins, anything he adds is a bonus.
Right.
But he ain't adding anything.
If Higgins only has four, if Higgins doesn't have 4 goals by the trade deadline, you're going to be hearing how Higgins is doing from Mitch Beck on the Wednesday night show.
let me just say this. They warned me. They said the guy he's lost his heart for the game. Now, you know these Canadian fans are fanatic. The guy, first of all, he's an American-born player, so right there, you know, they got a bias. Then, you know, they make a deal and they think they made the greatest deal in the world. So I took it with a grain of salt. I told them where they could go. I told them what they could stick, you know, up there, you know what. And I'm being proven wrong. And I don't like that. And like Mandar just said in the chat room, he's in a contract year and he's got no goals. So,
yes.
I mean, professionally, from a professional standpoint, it makes no sense. What, you know, he did run into a lot of tough luck early on, but I want to stick with the kid, but enough is enough. That's the way I feel about it. But, you know.
All right. We're down to 8 minutes already. We're going to bring in one more phone caller, but first I got a little something special for him here, so let's see.
I don't like.
All right. There's only one person that can follow that, and that is the great Mandar. Mandar, good evening. How are you?
Oh, my God, Jimbo. Thank you very much. That's awesome.
Just for you, buddy.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Good evening, Mouth. Good evening, Jim. Good to talk to you guys.
Paulie D is also on the line.
Paulie D! How are you, buddy?
Man, Mandar's all revved up tonight.
Paulie,
blowing our ears out.
Oh, there you are. There you are. Okay. Yeah. So what's going on, Mandar?
Oh, not much. Just getting ready for Western Canadian hockey tonight, watching the Rangers play the non-Sedin half and no Roberto Luongo in that tonight.
Oh, so what, that one of the Sedin sisters is gimpy?
Yeah, one of the Sedin sisters is out for probably another month with, I think it was a shoulder problem.
Wow.
Couldn't tell you which one it is, but they all look the same.
It's not the one with 20 points already or whatever. I think he's got 12 goals or something
probably,
already.
It's his brother probably.
Yeah.
Jonathan from Australia says that Mandal's had too much Kool-Aid. you know, man, I want to, you know, now that we got you on the air, do you have a question? I mean, did you come on here just to give your exuberance and your, you know, lend a nice feel to the show after that Drury talk?
Yeah, it was quite Drury to hear you guys talking about him.
I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was Drury. I thought I was pretty fired up about it there.
No, look, the guy's
a $7 million checking forward, but you throw the money he makes out of there. That I still think he's valuable, but I think from what I got from you guys, the gist is he's the leader by example type, not the vocal leader. He's never going to be a Messier type, and those things are rare to come by anyway.
I don't know what example he's doing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. What's the example?
You can't call Chris Drury lazy, and you can't tell me that he doesn't give his body up every time he's on the ice, whether it's blocking a shot or blocking a passing lane. He's not going to drive a guy through the boards. He's not going to overpower a goalie with a slap shot. You know, he's a great role player in his role. Now, $7 million meant his expectation was he was going to get 40 goals and score 20 game winners, and it hasn't panned out that way. And people always want to equate the money with the performance, and unfortunately, he's never going to live up to that.
Yeah, well we could do another half hour counterpoint with you about that, because I know Paulie
Yeah, but Paulie doesn't like young defensemen either, and unfortunately, we happen to have the rookie of the month either, so.
Yes,
come on.
You know what, Mandar? I am so sick and tired of you talking about it. Oh, my God, Mandar. Delzato is amazing. Where's your boy Gilroy?
My boy.
Oh.
Where's he been? What's he doing?
You're right. He's disappointing. Absolutely correct. You are correct.
Listen. We got a diamond in the rough in Delzato. I'm very excited. I'll be the first one to admit, not only is his offensive game fantastic, every time this kid takes the ice, he excites us with something else. It's great to see. Bottom line is, I complain about all the defense, Mandar, not just about the young guys. So if you want to talk about Redden,
you
want to talk about Girardi, because Girardi makes me sick to my stomach.
All right. We only have five minutes left, and we've got – you guys should have your own show, I think, and just all this stuff.
Alf, I think we need the Paulie D fight bell.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to segue into the next thing I want to get to, and, Jim, I think this is where we're headed to. As far as our upcoming guests, because I'm really excited about what's happening, and
yep,
it was
that's
funny.
How I want to push things up.
Okay, me and Jim, while we were in the city, we ran into EJ Raddick, who we all know from NHL Network. Guy worked for ESPN. The guy knows his puck. We all know that.
Yep.
And we talked to him, and Dan Girardi's name came up. Jim, what did he say?
If Dan Girardi was on Nashville, nobody'd know who he was.
That's what he said.
Was that basically
he said, Ranger fans overrate Girardi, and that if he was on Nashville, nobody would even make a deal. He would be on nothing. And I was saying, that's what Paulie D's been saying.
We could actually hear Paulie D smiling from New York City when he said that. All right, so
Jim, give the rundown.
All right, so speaking of EJ Hradek, we had a very nice conversation with him. He's a terrific guy. Really very nice to us. We had a good conversation with him. And EJ will be on the show December 1st. He is going to join us. That is the Tuesday night show. He'll join us probably about 9 o'clock. And he said he'll be on from 9 to 10, so we'll see if we get an hour out of him. That would be great. But before that, we got a lot of other great stuff going on. Tomorrow night on the on the Wednesday night show, we have Jay Moran, who is the author of the book, The Rangers, the Bruins, and the End of an Era. It's all about the Rangers-Bruins rivalry from the old days. He's going to be on and talk about that.
Hey, Jim, I don't mean to interrupt you on that, but I just got an advanced copy, and this is an amazing book, an absolutely amazing book.
Cool. 700 pages.
Oh, it's great, though. I mean, if you're an old-time Ranger-Bruin fan, oh, my God, it's just fantastic.
Excellent. All right, and then next week on the Tuesday night show, we have former Ranger Kevin Miller is going to join us. I think that's about 8:15. That show will be that'll be just mouth next Tuesday night. I'll be on a trip for the day job, unfortunately, next week, so I won't be around Tuesday or Wednesday night. Then the Wednesday night show next week, which is November 11th, we're going to have former Ranger Carrie Wilson. Talk to him a little bit. And then on November 18th, down to a minute to go, on November 18th, we're going to be joined by Adam Rotter. He's going to sit in with us for a little while. He writes the SNY Rangers blog. So we'll talk to Adam a little bit and talk about a couple of different things with him. So we got a lot of guests coming up. We got Jay Moran tomorrow night, Kevin Miller next week, Carrie Wilson next week, Adam Rotter in a couple of weeks, and then EJ Heratic to kick off December, and then after that, who knows. Those of you, I know we've been talking up Theo Fleury. He's still coming. I promise you that. I just can't get his PR. His PR department is trying to lock him into a date. They wanted to actually have him on with us next Tuesday night, and we didn't want to do it since I wasn't going to be here. So we gave them some alternate dates, and I am hoping to hear within the next day or two what he's agreed to. So that's it for now. Thank you, Mouth. As always, a pleasure. Thank you, Mandar. Thank you, Paulie. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will catch you guys tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. All right. We are off the air. You know, it's the same thing every week. At one point in the show, I feel like, man, we got an hour to go. We got enough to talk about. And then the next thing I know, she's yelling in my ear, 60 seconds. And I'm like, shit. Got to get everything in. It's the same thing every week. Good show tonight. Halligan is fantastic. What a gem.
Jimmy the gem. Yes. Very great. Very good. Very good. Yeah. So,
Hey, Jim, how's the trip back on Spirit Airlines?
Fantastic. left LaGuardia on time. I got home early.
Wow.
And was home to go trick-or-treating with my daughter, and yeah, all was well.
Awesome.
The $16 for chips and soda on the plane later, but yeah, it was fine.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I asked for a Diet Coke and a bag of chips. It was like, you know, $6 or something. And the stewardess takes my card and walks away and then comes back a minute later, and she's got a handful of cash. And she says, oh, the lady behind you doesn't have any her credit card with her. Would you mind? So I'm like, yeah, fine. Put it on my card. Sorry. Eddie, what I'll do is I wrote down John's number, and I'll just, you know, keep it. And, you know, when we feel whatever the appropriate time is, I'll just call him direct and say,
you don't have that number. Send it over to me, too.
No.
Mandal wants it, too. No, I'm only kidding.
Yeah. I'm going to post it on the site tomorrow.
Yeah, he was great. We got Joe Patterson in December.
Joe Patterson. The 2-4.
I forgot about
two,
him.
Four. Joe Patterson, what you call? He was the last fight that Fatiu had.
Oh, really?
And Patterson pounded him. So
I think Patterson was our specialist against L.A. He always played good against L.A., like when Dominic Moore only played good against the Canadians.
All right, guys. I got the mambo. But great show, Mandar, of course. I'll see you tomorrow.
You got it.
How are you for covering for Jim on the 10th with
a week from today? I'll be fine for that, but on our show next week on Wednesday night, I'm flying out to San Francisco for that, so I'm probably not going to be able to make that one.
Yeah, that looks like a Paulie D, maybe. Wow.
You mean Tati?
With Carrie Wilson.
Oh,
Carrie Wilson.
Paulie, you still on?
No,
Paulie left. Oh, my, that was so funny. I just knew. I'm glad I got 5 minutes left to bait him on that one.
Yeah. But you know, the thing is that, you know, it's funny because Paulie was worried about Gilroy because he was too offensive. Now he's not offensive at all.
Right.
So, yeah, you did a good job in baiting him.
I wish I could have heard you chuckling at, because I know you knew that I was doing that.
Yeah. All right, take care, guys.
All right, guys.
All right, fellas. Good night, everybody.
Night. Okay, bye.